mothers,
and others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we talk to people across industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz, hi that's me, and Shelley.
Hello, that's me.
And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Today on Music Mothers and Others, we are delving into communications as a creative industry that comfortably sits alongside and even straddles the music industry. Our guest is one of the most trusted voices in Australian radio at the moment. It's health and science reporter Tegan Taylor. For over a year now, Tegan has been one half of the ABC's must-listen podcasts, CoronaCast, along with Dr. Norman Swan. Together, they've provided a steady voice of reason during the coronavirus outbreak by asking questions, giving clear answers, and always showing the importance of staying open to learn more. They've won the nation's hearts and more than one award in their travels too. Hello, Walkleys. We're very keen to hear more about how she does it. We're so pleased to have you here. Welcome, Tegan Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so excited, Tegan. Thank you. I'll keep the fangirling to a minimum, I promise, or an acceptable level. Tegan, do you mind just starting by telling us how you like to describe your role in industry? I know that, well, I hear you describe yourself every day as a health reporter, but can you tell me a little bit more about not just with CoronaCast, how you kind of live in the broadcasting ecosystem?
Yeah, it's funny because it's a relatively new thing for me. My background in journalism has always been in print and digital, so like writing words that people read, and now I make words that people listen to when they come out of my mouth, which is a very stupid way of just saying that I'm a podcaster and radio presenter sometimes now. And I call myself a health and science reporter, even though I don't have formal training in either of those areas. It's just a passion, and I think a good point of difference, because most of the people who are listening or reading the things that I make also don't have formal training in health and science. And it's good to have, I think, someone who can bring these really complex concepts to a level that is understandable without sacrificing accuracy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing I love about you, is it's not, you're not in competition with Norman at all, but you're also a really nice compliment. I'm trying to work out how to do this. Maybe you're Dolly to his Kenny. Is that kind of how you think it would fit? Would that be all right? Or, you know, you definitely, your island's in the stream, but you bring different things. Is that all right with you?
Sure, exactly. No, I think it's good. I think, well, Norman has like a really long career in being a health communicator, like not just being a physician and journalist, and I won't do a Scottish accent. But
I'd listen to that Scottish accent, though, if you did want to attempt it, I'd appreciate it.
No, please. I was trying to read my kids a story last night with a Scottish person in it, and I was wandering around the British Isles as I was trying to do the accent. No. But Norman can get a bit doctory, and it's my job to keep him grounded in what we plebs understand, especially in a time of so much uncertainty with a brand new pandemic that even the experts are still only just coming to understand.
What I really love that too, your approach is very informed. It was hard because we couldn't see each other, but we were all like, what do we listen to? What don't we listen to? And we all decided on CoronaCast as regular 10 to 15 minutes accurate. You get in, you listen, you get out. You guys were the right mixture of this is what you need to know, but also we're humans. Do you see your job as being the resident human? Not that Norman's not human, but you know what I mean?
Is he not human? I've never seen the data to prove otherwise. No. The beginning of the pandemic, we were all freaking out, right? Like it wasn't just that like regular people were freaking out and the doctors were like completely on top of what was going on. There was so much uncertainty and there was so much information. And as a health reporter, I was trying to consume that, and it was just this fire hose of news and research and misinformation. And we were just going, the original kind of concept of CoronaCast was like, just give us 10 minutes and we'll give you what you need to navigate today. And that, I think, even though we're now 15 months into it or 18 months into this pandemic and counting, and there's still a lot of misinformation, there's still a lot of uncertainty around vaccines and the future of, well, the future of the world, but the future of the virus as well. That still, I hope, is that if all you can invest in is 10 minutes a day, you're going to feel informed enough to navigate your life.
Yeah, what a great approach, actually. 10 minutes a day on every weekday, and I know it gets broadcast twice a day, I think, on the ABC on certain channels as well. So your voice is definitely getting out there to the public. And this makes me think about how much you do is really public education for a range of age groups, including making content that kids can understand. And we know this from your special CoronaCast episode that was last year, where it was the kids sent in their fantastic voice memos, and there was kids age 4 and all kinds of ages asking the really scary stuff that, you know, perhaps parents had trouble answering, but we had your advice. How did you go about making that sort of content, like making that program for kids?
I was doing that every day already. Like my kids last year were 6 and 8. And they're asking questions like, will our dog get it? Like, can animals get it? You know, if you get it, are you going to die? Yeah. Is there, you know, just these really fundamental questions that I think, like, adults would like to think that their questions are more sophisticated, but at the heart of it, the sort of things that kids want to know is what everyone wants to know. Are we all going to die? When will it be over? How do I protect myself? Like, what risk is there to me and the people that I love? And that's what all of us wanted to know. If I had it my way, we would have done kids CoronaCast 100% of the time, because I had so many, well, one, because I love talking to kids, and two, because so many adults came up to me later and they were like, oh, I finally understand it now. Thanks for explaining it. it's just bringing it down to a level that, and I love those sorts of like explain it like I'm 5 style formats, where it's just like, if you bring this down to its most fundamental level, it's still got to be accurate. It's still got to be true. But if anyone can understand it, then you can navigate it better. Yeah, you're more equipped.
It's that not being scared to appear silly for what you don't know as well, which again, I think is such a strength about what you do. Is it's that accessibility and coming wanting to know. But in order to say, I want to know, you have to admit what you don't know.
Yes.
And, you know, kids don't have that hang up, you know.
They're used to just not understanding anything.
100%. Or making it up and then going with it. I just, you know, when it first hit, I had a 3-month-old and a 2-year-old. And my little girl, you'd see, obviously the little one had no idea what was going on. But the 2-year-old, you'd see she'd start in her play. Things would happen. So dollies would have to wash their hands before they did things and couldn't get too close to people and things like that, you know, and you're thinking, oh, so she is picking this up, you know.
That's fascinating. My kids would just do like stacks on each other and go, social distancing, social distancing.
We had my then 4-year-old just had her birthday party in March, and it was the last social occasion pretty much of the whole year where she's got to see her old friends and we got to see, we had family over and we had the neighbors and everything. And then of course the world changed. So she sort of looked back at that as like the magical pre-virus party, and everything, the play that sort of proceeded from there was about pretending that the party was still happening, you know, and we didn't have to social distance and we didn't have to not hug and everything. So it was kind of like a really different but strange response to it all.
That's really heartbreaking.
I know, it's very well here in Melbourne. Let's just say I think we've had it a bit tougher than some of the other states here in Melbourne. So yeah, you know, just coming out of lockdown now, we are.
Hi, I'm Tegan Taylor, and you're listening to Music, Mothers, and Others.
Tegan, I'm thinking about your broadcasting style and how you've just got a great way of explaining things. Have you got any memories or sort of past experience of yourself when you were younger as a kid to do with media, or maybe even to do with music, things that you looked up to or things that really affected you such that you're able to reflect on that now or bring that into your working life?
Oh, so I was a massive bookworm as a kid, and I have always loved music and loved singing. But I think for me with science communication, my dad was like the guy that would always sort of, you know, get down on your level and explain things and explain that way the world works at probably a relatively sophisticated sort of level of, you know, talking about maths and physics and that sort of thing, but in a way that was really accessible and really kind of baked into that is this sense of wonder about the world around you and this sense of curiosity that, you know, if you puzzle it out, you can understand it. And I think that's what I would like to think that I bring to the work that I do, is trying to bring that sense of wide-eyed wonder to this amazing world we live in and these incredible machines that we navigate through the world in, i.e. our flesh bags, our bodies, and that you can then kind of, if you can understand it enough, you can't help but be completely enthralled by it. And so that's sort of the energy that I'd like to think that I'd bring. But in terms of communicating, I'm trying to think. I do think that, I don't know if everyone's like this, but I kind of feel like I can get in touch with like my child version of me relatively easily. Like I remember those feelings that you have as a kid, of the stuff that we were saying before about feeling like the world is such a mystery and there's so much stuff that you don't understand about it. And hopefully like you then have like a compassion for yourself or for the people around you who might be feeling that kind of a bit lost and not sure what to do. And sort of understanding that people are often asking those questions out of that sense, or maybe not asking questions and feeling defensive and scared out of this fear of not understanding what's happening.
It's a really beautiful skill too. And to be able to do that in a clear way, but not in a patronizing way, is a really delicate line. Is that something that you ever kind of remember thinking, oh, somebody does that a good way? Like, is there anybody you emulate from that point of view? Or
I think, you know what? It's such a cliche. I think Dr. Carl, like Australia's...
I was about to ask, is he your dad?
Was he like your Triple J sort of regular science guy?
My dad is also a massive fan of very loud Hawaiian shirts. So maybe he is my dad. And, like, I've never seen them both in the same room together. Let's put it that way.
My PhD supervisor was exactly the same. Bruce is the same. Hawaiian shirts, one of the best minds I know. Yep, maybe that's the trick, right?
There's some kind of correlation between Hawaiian shirts and like cool, brainy people. No, Dr. Carl had this, it's this way of, it's not dumbing something down and it's not being patronizing or talking down to you like some kind of like smart parent. It's this kind of shared wonder about, did you know that this is the case and it happens because of this? And you're just like swept along on this ride. He's telling a story. And that I think is really useful. And then the other person who I've really, really come to admire in the last year or so, because I hadn't worked with her before now, is Julie Leask, who's a social scientist who talks about vaccine hesitancy. And this idea that when people are being defensive, it's often they're coming from a place of fear. And filling that gap between what you think and what they think with facts is almost never going to change their mind. But coming alongside them and trying to see what it is that is motivating them, at least then you can understand why they feel like that. And maybe if they feel like they've been heard, they might be more receptive to what you've got to say. So I think there's like somewhere in like the halfway point between like, let's be incredibly like amazed by the world together and let's understand where people are coming from before we try to bombard them with facts is where I try to sit.
I really like that. I think that also those people skills are parenting skills, right? And, you know, your kids have popped in every once in a while. Was it around Christmas that they popped in?
Yeah, we did a Christmas special with the girls pretending to be Norman and me.
Exactly.
It actually came because I can't remember what it was. My daughter, she's now 7, in her prep diary last year, they had to write like a journal every day. And usually it's like, it was during lockdown, right? Like I watched TV or like I played with the dog. And then there was one time and she'd written down, my mum does Crowana cast. We have to stay quiet, CWYIET, or however she spelled quiet, for half an hour. It is boring. And it just cracked me. It was such a mood, right? Like it was like we were locked down, we were homeschooling. I was like, shut up. You just be quiet half an hour. Well, I do this podcast for Australia. And then that ends up in her like year one journal. And so then I took a photo of her standing at the microphone, like as a bit of a joke. And she thought I was taking a video and she's like, hi, welcome to CoronaCast. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor. So Norman, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, how do you know the script? It turns out my room isn't soundproof. They were hearing me every day doing this same like thing over and over again. And so we didn't even need to coach them that much to do the Christmas episode. They already knew the script.
What's amazing about that, number one, is if your room isn't soundproof, they genuinely were being quiet.
Well, yeah.
Look at that. That's amazing. And number two, like, do you ever, because this is something Shelley and I have worried about for a long time is you know, when you have kids, but you also have work, and then you have this intensity of lockdown where it's all in one place, plus you're doing all of this stuff. Do you try and separate and pretend one doesn't happen and become the classic BBC dad, you know, who's always on the brink of embarrassment, or do you lead all the way in? And Shell and I have led all the way in, and now we just use them as tax dodgers, you know, like we just, if they're in, then, you know, we write about it. How do you kind of navigate that work life? Well, I'd say balance, but is it even really a balance? It's just that kind of what
seesaw.
It is.
Seesaw. Isn't it like a seesaw? It's
yeah, that's down. A good way of thinking of it. No, I think during lockdown, and Shelley would know this better than any of us, like that, it was so intense. And for us, it was a relatively short period of time. In retrospect, it felt like a long time at the time. And when you're in that zone, there is no choice really. Like, you can either just close the door and pretend your kids don't exist, like you say, but that's unsustainable. But then also, you don't want your whole personality to be that you're a parent, right? Because you've got lots of things that you're bringing, and being a parent is part of it. And that's, I think, for a lot of people, that's been relatable for me. Norman has kids too, by the way, but they're grown up now.
I believe one of them spoke to somebody important at some point.
I can't remember. Yeah, whatevs.
Yeah, I think it is good to sort of not bring everything back to that, but to be conscious that a lot of people who are listening are navigating this through being parents or being grandparents or having little people in their lives as well.
Yeah, it is. That's part of that humanity, isn't it? I do find that balance is important and that relatability, you know. It's interesting though, you say, because Norman's got kids and his kids are more grown up. Do you find that was informing his, because I don't want to say you're a generation apart, but in terms of kids and child rearing, you probably are. So were you coming at things differently because you've got different sets of empathies? You know, you're always, I guess, like it or not, in the back of your mind, how do I explain this to little people? He's probably in the back of his mind thinking, how do I explain this to people who want to have a job or trying to have a house or trying to make their decisions about their own families? You know, do you think that there's those two positions coming in at all?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to speak for Norman and his like thinking about his own children, but I do know that he wears the responsibility of being a very trusted voice and having a very, very large number of people listening to it. Like he wears that. It's a heavy, it weighs heavily on his mind. And because of that, you then treading really carefully when you're trying to make, you know, you're analyzing a situation, you're trying to distill information for people, but you don't want to be so prescriptive that people kind of are putting their lives and livelihoods in your hands. Because, you know, as much as it's a good resource to have people sort of talking about things in broad brush strokes, it doesn't replace the need to go and talk to your own GP or your own specialist about your medical needs. So that's a fine line that I think any health reporter has to walk, and not just health reporters as well, like people within the public eye and people in the media who are making claims, to understand that people are listening. And I mean, this podcast about the music industry and that sort of thing, like when you have a platform, you have to use that responsibly.
You're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
That makes me think about the occupation that you've chosen, or maybe you've fallen into. You are a journalist and you are working in radio and podcasting at the moment. Would you tell people who are studying this or want to enter that field that this is an occupation that is well suited to workers with families? I know there's some occupations that are not suitable to being a parent and a worker. What do you think about the one that you've chosen?
That's a really interesting, it's such a tight industry. Like journalism is so, so competitive. And that's been the case for a long time. I think it's even more the case now than it used to be. And I remember sitting in my first journalism lecture at university, and there was the gag of like, look to the person to the right of you, look to the person to the left of you. Only one of you will ever get a job as a journalist. You're like, well, it won't be me. I was just like, I'm not going to be the one that like beats the odds, and look at me, here I am. So there you go. So like, you know, on one hand, you know, don't be so defeatist, but on the other hand, like the industry has shrunk. The pressures are really high. The pressures to work for free are really high. I work for the national broadcaster that is funded by taxpayer dollars. So in a sense, there's less of a worry there, but then where, you know, budget cuts and all that sort of thing. Like everyone is every media outlet is facing real pressure. and it's often shift work and all this sort of thing. So like, I don't know if I would be like, journalism's a super family friendly job, but I think being a self-employed person or being a podcaster, like you guys would know, no one's a podcaster for the money, right? Like, but it's fun and you get to talk right into people's ears. And when you're self-employed, you can have a bit more work-life balance. So I think if your like primary goal is for a really family-friendly job, I wouldn't recommend journalism. But if you love talking to people, you can make a way to make it work.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why Liz and I have got our day jobs being academics, and this is our fun thing to do on the side.
That's right. Which is such a stable career in itself. It's the type of thing that you just walk into. There's no precarity to lead up to it. And we're in the arts as well. Yeah. So we're just, you know,
being a music academic, like what would you, yeah.
It's looking good.
I think I'd be looking at the whole lecture theatre around me and saying maybe like 1% of you might be a music academic. Yeah.
You mentioned before that you love talking to kids. If somebody turned around tomorrow with a magic pot of money and said, hey, make Corona casts for kids.
Oh my gosh.
Would you be there?
Do you have the pot of money? Can I have it now?
Let's go for a grant, Chell. Let's go for a grant.
We'll fund you, Tegan.
Yeah. I'd love to do a podcast explaining tricky health ideas to kids. I think that there would be, I know I'm saying it here on this podcast and hopefully someone in the commissioning area of the ABC listens. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to do that, do you think there's like an ideal like age? Because I'm even thinking now how much my then two-year-old, now 3-year-old picks up, you know. Do you think that there's a time when they're, when like a sweet spot? How early would you go?
I don't know. There's that stage. I just remember like you've got a child who's turning 3, so you understand that they ask why constantly.
All the time.
But very frustratingly, you craft this like really age-appropriate, nuanced answer and then they just go, why?
Why?
And you're like, I just told you why. I gave you examples. I was really thoughtful about it. And then they're like, why? And you're like, because I'm trying to talk to you.
Why?
Because you asked me a question. Like, so.
In case you want a title, But Why is already the name of 4 kids' podcasts. I looked. But Why.
That's good to know.
Is it But Why with 2 T's? Or is it just a 1 T?
Oh, that's a different
thing. Because when they get older, it's all about the butt.
This is true. Actually, that's a good segue. The famous Can You Get Corona from Farts? Can you tell us about that infamous episode and the kind of light touch that taking someone seriously without taking yourself too seriously?
It's so funny that a podcast about like a global pandemic that truly has ruined people's lives and taken lives globally, and I don't want to trivialize it, but it's weird that the tone that people always talk to us about is that it's really like lighthearted and upbeat. And sometimes it's not a comedy podcast, but it has its moments of humor. And it's just sort of weird, right? Like, I think that if you'd let yourself, I'm talking you, I'm saying me, if we'd let ourselves take it too seriously, it ends up adding to people's stress. And so they just don't tune in. And if you don't tune in, then you don't get the information. So there's got to be some kind of like level of chattiness, approachability. And lockdown makes you like a bit crazy anyway. And someone's going like, you know, you said that they could detect coronavirus in fecal samples or butt swabs. I don't know what they call them in doctor land, anal swabs. And so like, does that mean you could catch it from a fart? And Norman like has this real sort of button down, very doctory kind of manner every now and again, but in real life he is an absolute wag and just loves a joke and loves a butt joke, as you now know. And yeah, it was just one of the, and it just went bonkers. I was going to say viral, but that joke is old. They mentioned it on Colbert Show, although the thing that I liked most about that was that he'd said doctors in Australia have made this joke, and I was like, they made me a doctor.
Tegan Taylor, honorary doctor.
Take it. Look,
farts and coronavirus.
Maybe that's what we need to do, Shell. We need to make Tegan an honorary doctor. Then we can get the funding to make the podcast. This is all happening. This is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. It's all going to happen.
It's a process. Yeah, love it.
We're listening to music, mothers,
and others.
Tegan, let's swing this conversation around back to the world of music, because we know that you're a musical being and that you have a slight history in singing, and we're not going to ask you to sing today, but we will ask you about the music that's happening in your household at the moment. And we'd like to know what music you like to listen to with your kids. It can be together, it can be something that's on the TV, it can be a soundtrack that you like, it can be whatever Spotify playlist is going in your house. But could you please complete the sentence for us? The kids and I are listening to
anything Disney.
Oh, are we talking old school Disney or new Disney?
Into the Unknown.
Oh, yeah, Into the Unknown. The other day my daughter was looking for her lunchbox or something in her school bag, and she started going, "Show yourself." And I was just like, amazing. She's definitely
I'm dying to eat you.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, and you mentioned Hamilton before too.
I'm a massive Hamilton fan. So everyone was like massively into Hamilton a few years ago, like when it first came out, and I was like, oh, whatever, basics. And then someone was like, you'll like it. And I'm like, don't tell me what I like, because I hate it when people tell me that I like something. And then I listened to it and I got obsessed with it. And I basically listened to it on repeat for about 2 years straight. Like, honestly, I just went right down into this like nerdy rabbit hole. You know that meme of like, if someone was holding a gun to your head and you had to sing a song without ruining any of the words, and if you've made a mistake, we'll pull the trigger. Like, what would the song be? I'm like, the entire Hamilton soundtrack.
You only have one shot and you need it.
I love it. You're actually not our only guest who has said the Hamilton soundtrack. I think it's just been on repeat for some people in Melbourne in lockdown, because it's something that older-ish kids can watch with their parents and just have on and on.
I just think it's brilliant. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is a friggin' genius. He's one of my like five people that you'd have at your like dream dinner party.
He's so delightful. I genuinely think we could be best friends.
Yeah, he's so delightful, isn't he? Like everything he does, just, you know, and when they put him and Jimmy Fallon together, I know it's like marshmallow and chocolate and it should be too sweet and too sugary and too cliched, but it's just gorgeous.
It's so cute. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks so much, Tegan Taylor, for being our guest on Music Mothers and Others.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Music Mothers and Others is written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt and edited by Nina Longfellow. We're broadcast on 2SER and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. Visit us on Instagram and Facebook to find out who our upcoming guests will be. See you next time.